Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, you're listening to Tax Tuesday. This is Toby Mathis with
Jeff Webb.
And Jeff, who's been running this thing for the last couple weeks. Yeah. I don't remember the last Tax Tuesday I did. Seems years ago. Anyway, we have a lot to go over today, and I understand you guys actually ended on time.
We did.
I was gone.
But we didn't answer a lot of the side questions. So.
You didn't?
No.
You're letting everybody else do it.
Yep, we were.
By the way, we do have others answering questions, so that's half the fun here is we have Elliot and Octavia on and Patty answering questions in the background. So we see some, there's an aloha. Aloha, Arlene, and hello. We got a bunch of folks on. We're going to let some more come on. Hey, as always, jump onto our social media. We're always putting stuff out. We have a feeling it's going to be a eventful fall.
Yes, absolutely.
There's going to be lots of action, both from the Treasury and somebody says, what's your Labor Day special? You get to work. That's I had a coach. We'd always have practice on Labor Day because it's the perfect day to labor. All right. So you ask your questions by all means. Hey, there's some from New York. We got it. Hey, tell me where you guys are at right now. I would love to see that. I sometimes do that on the regular live cast. This is going to fill up our Q&A real quick, but just tell me where you guys are at from all over.
We'll have to do a poll sometime with that.
And see where everybody is. We got Rose Hill, Dallas, Kansas, Florida, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You guys got some stuff going on. Texas, Pennsylvania, my hometown. Grew up in media. San Francisco, California, Westminster, Mars. Elon's met. Oh my gosh, now this is we're killing it right now. Napa, Houston, oh my goodness, Sacramento, Ocean City, Maryland, Anchorage, Alaska, just to give you guys an idea of how many people. Houston, Port Washington, Seattle, Round Rock, that's great. Let's see, now Consolidated, there's a bunch of stuff in here. I'll go through and answer a bunch of your questions. Louisiana, Gilbert, Lancaster, Denver. You guys are all over the place. Too many Christmas. It seems like we got representatives from all over the country. So I hope you guys are doing well, staying safe, getting through these lockouts. Hopefully we get through it. I'm not going to give you guys too much woodlands. There we go. Know that area, Incline Village. Gosh, we got people literally from all over. Orlando, Michigan, Puyallup, Washington. Notice I said that right, Jeff.
I saw that.
Heard that. From Gig Harbor. You're up there in Clint's hometown and hanging out. Pompano Beach, which I'd like to be in Pompano Beach. Fort Collins, fantastic. Gosh, look at that. We're going to phase three on Friday in Maryland. Yay. You guys know that I've had another tree fall on a house and I had another house burned down since we spoke
last. Oh, my gosh.
That's two this year. Like, we've had two fires. We keep having trees fall on stuff. They said it just kind of eased onto the house, so it didn't like fall over. Why are you guys wasting time? We're letting everybody get on. We have like hundreds of people. All right, so let's jump in. We'll get to everybody. I love going through that stuff. Let's go over opening questions. I live in Maryland, and I'm going, and I always put an extra M in there, going to buy a vacation home, Airbnb in Florida. Do I need an LLC in Florida or in Maryland? Oops. My company is an S-Corp since 2015, but all business income has been paid to the owner's name and not the business name. What can I do? If I sell a piece of land and keep the primary house, what is the 1031 value at zero or 150 purchase price in 2012? Can I write off an RV if I use it for business travel? If so, what are the consequences or what are the requirements? We're going to answer all of these. What is the right way to move money in and out of an LLC? Do I move personal funds to the business account and then pay the expenses? How does a trust work in relationship to an LLC in real estate? How do I add my LLC, my living trust? Are there tax consequences? Can you take depreciation on a rental condo? What do you use for the bases? Fantastic questions. What are the main differences between an S corp and a C corp? What are the advantages of making my futures trading account an LLC? Is family limited partnership, irrevocable trust, or LLC better for small business? Is it better to invest in oil and gas as an individual or you or your LLC? So just so you guys know, I grabbed these off of the chart. So I'm feeling like usually we spot check them for spelling and things like that. But I try to keep your guys' language for the most part. Is there an option to give employees a bonus without being charged a luxury tax? I have an LLC for my real estate business. How should I be paying myself through the business if I plan on filing as an S corp? So first off, great questions. That is really good stuff. So what we're going to do is we're going to jump into some of the Q&A. One of the first things was something that we were just talking about. And by the way, we have lots of people. Again, we have our folks there answering your questions, but I'm still going to jump into this. There was the president's executive order. So I'm going to go all the way down. We've already had about 200 questions and comments come in. Mm-hmm. I'm scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. Any guidance on the executive order for payroll taxes? What that is, Jeff, I'll let you go through that.
Yeah, as everybody I'm sure has heard, there was a executive order about a month ago that the president was going to allow people to defer the employee portion of Social Security. On Friday, IRS came out with guidance on this, and it was pretty miserable guidance. It didn't say a whole lot that we didn't already know. What we do know is that it is optional for the employer to allow that deferral. Again, it is a deferral. It's not forgiven. It's not a tax holiday like back during the Obama administration.
And you just hit on a big one. And I just wrote it up there so you guys are seeing it. This is the one that's throwing everybody off. They're saying it's a deferral and that you're going to pay it in the first 4 months, 2021.
Now, the executive order, if you read it, it wasn't really that long, actually said that the Treasury Department should seek a means to forgive this debt, this deferral, which means that Congress has to act upon it because the executive office has, they can't mess with the purse strings.
Right. Now, you guys hear us say this sometimes that Congress passes laws and the bureaucrats do their best to screw it up so you don't get any benefit out of it. Mm-hmm. This is a case where the president sat down and said, hey, I'm trying to give a holiday. And then the Treasury came out and offered guidance and screwed it all up. They put a cap on it and they let us know that we're going to have to pay for the employee, an employee of ours that defers. We're responsible for collecting that tax and it's just deferred. We're supposed to be paying it in the first part of 2021. Now, here's the problems. What if somebody leaves your employ at the end of the year?
Yep.
What if they quit in December? The employer, is it the employer that's responsible for those taxes? Are you supposed to go after the employee? Who's responsible? Because Treasury is not going after the employee. It's going to go after the employer. What if I hire somebody in January who had deferral from the previous 3 or 4 months in 2020? Am I responsible as the employer of that individual? Now, am I responsible for their withholding of taxes for a previous employer?
And from what I gathered from the guidance is that the employer who deferred it is going to be the employer responsible.
But they don't specifically say it.
True.
And I think what happened is we're operating really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing things and everybody's, you know, just kind of, if they don't like something, they do their best to screw it up. If they give it to a committee and the committee spews something out, and then we just have a lot of stuff being thrown out there. So my guidance to anybody is when there's uncertainty, stand still, don't change. And so we have a deferral. I don't want to defer. I know what your employees are going to say. They're going to say, I want the extra 6.2%. That's what it is. That old age, disability, survivors, benefits, Medicare, it adds up to 6.2. They're going to want that. They're going to say, hey, I'd rather have that. And you're going to say, as an employer, I don't even know, like, it's just deferred. You're going to have to pay it.
Right. So for an employee making, say, $50,000, they're going to defer about just over $1,000 over that 4-month period from September through December. Mm-hmm. Now,
if you're over the $4,000 biweekly, you're out.
Right, which is comes about $104,000, I think.
$104,000.
So if Congress forgives us this deferral, that's all great and well. However, if they don't, then come your first payroll in January, you start having to pay this $1,000 or however much your deferral is. And you have to pay it ratably, so they're going to take it out of every paycheck through the end of April. And that's what we end up with.
So. And you're paying your ordinary payroll tax.
Too. Correct.
So you're going to make less, in theory, you're going to make less in 2021 than you did in 2022 as far as take-home pay.
So, yeah, the people that could help the most, those who are making low wages and all, is going to hurt the most if they have to pay it back. Because people in the lower income levels are going to need that money and use that money.
Just call it out. Congress, get your act together. Pick our direction. It's just really annoying.
Yeah, I would look if anything's going to happen. It's probably not going to happen until October, which is unfortunate. And if it doesn't happen in October, it probably won't happen, period.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of politics going on. Unfortunately, we're all stuck in between. All right, for a, I'm going to answer one more question that somebody asked that's still on, is for a 35-year-old W-2 employee, I'm just going to call him a high-net income earner, what is the best vehicle for using for a syndication? It really depends on how much income you have coming in, what your tax appetite is, and if you don't want to pay tax on it, by all means, use a self-directed IRA if you're not really getting any of the benefits, the tax benefits. Problem is, in a syndication, usually you don't pay much tax on the income that is generating. Usually you have enough loss inside the syndication. Usually they're cost sagging and they're doing something like that.
Yeah, from what I've been seeing with those syndications, while the syndication is in operation, they're typically losing money. But maybe 5 years down the road, they're selling the property. And
it's capital gains, though.
Correct.
So this is what I would say. Capital gains, you're going to be 0%, 15%, or 20%, depending on your tax bracket. If you are married, filing jointly, making over, what, $600,000, you're looking at 20%.
Yes.
If you're married, filing jointly below $80,000, you're looking at 0%. So it sounds like you're probably closer to the 20 than the 0. So I'd say you're probably going to be at the 15%. That's not horrible. That's not horrible if you hold it for more than a year. So me personally, I kind of look at real estate, and depending what kind of syndication it is, I'm assuming it's real estate, but it could be anything. It could be a syndication into a business. If I'm looking at long-term capital gains, I'm not scared of it as an individual.
And keep in mind that if you do invest in, say, a real estate syndication, and you are high net worth, which they usually require you to be to join these syndications, you're probably not going to be able to deduct any losses currently. They're going to be suspended until probably the property sells. And then you can recognize the losses at that time.
Yep. All right. So somebody just said on the deferral issue on the payroll, you'll pay double for the first four months of 2021.
Correct.
Yeah. In essence. So you're still going to pay it back.
Now, one thing to keep in mind, this is only the employee's share of Social Security. It's not the employer's portion, and it's not Medicare. So it's at 6.2%.
Yeah, so you said welcome back. All right, let's jump into some of the actual questions.
Cool.
I live in Maryland and am, screw that, going to buy a vacation home, Airbnb in Florida. Do I need an LLC in Florida and in Maryland?
What do you recommend in this?
So home state is Maryland, and you're getting a vacation home, and it looks like vacation home Airbnb. So this is where it gets questionable. Depending on how many days you're doing it as a vacation home, it might be a second home. And so then it could be partially an investment, partially. So it could be a second house, which tells me that I don't want to screw it up. I'll probably just put this one right here into an LLC. And that would be Florida. I wouldn't necessarily need a Maryland entity. Now, what scares me is this guy right here, this Airbnb. And the reason is because Airbnb, if it's 7 days or less.
Average stay, right?
Yep, average stay. It's a hotel, which means it's active income, which means you have self-employment tax and other things to worry about. Now, we just converted something that was a passive entity, passive asset, into an active asset. So here's what I would do. And again, this is up to your situation. I know you guys are going to make fun of me. Somebody already did, because I said it depends. It really does depend on how much activity you're going to do. So I'm just going to say I'm going to have an LLC in Florida. But here's what it looks like. Let's say that I have my real estate and I want it to remain passive. This would be an LLC in Florida. Now I do Airbnb. I'm going to rent this, and it's going to be a lease, and it's going to be probably 1 year leases, and I'm going to set up either an LLC or a corp. It's going to be taxed as a corp also in Florida, and this is going to be the Airbnb business. And so I'm going to have a long-term lease to keep whatever comes to me. I'm going to make sure that's passive. And if you're, depending on how much other activity you have, this guy may actually be in a holding, a Wyoming entity holding that comes to me. For those of you who've been through asset protection, understand why. Florida is actually one of those. It's the home of the Olmstead case. So it depends on how many people are going to be owners in that thing. But the Airbnb, this is equal to active. You only have to do this if your average daily rentals are 7 days or less. And that's simply because we don't want to have active income hitting us. Yeah, somebody just asked a bunch of questions. We just started getting blown up here. We'll let it. So I can see a guy holding a question mark and a question. Some bargain. Is that what I should be seeing? Yes, that's what you should be seeing. So, Michael, that's somebody's asking whether this is the few bunch of things. Yeah, so a lot of folks are hitting it. So you have a few little issues moving around in here. But at the end of the day, the reason this is important is because this guy here, I'm just going to circle it. Your real estate is equal to depreciation, which should keep your income really, really low. It should basically eliminate any of the tax consequences from the Airbnb. The Airbnb, we're just trying to keep that active income off of you, but this could be a $2,000 a month lease. The Airbnb is making, let's say that it's making $3,000 a month, and I'm just picking numbers out of my head. We can write off that extra $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 pretty easy with just regular business expenses going back to the individual for operating. Anything else you'd throw on that?
No, the only thing I was going to ask, since Florida does tax corporations, is there any point where this becomes maybe not a great idea?
It depends on whether you're making money. I'm zeroing it out. And somebody asked, what if you had an S-corp? Yeah, Trevor, the S-corp works too. What we care about is that it's not you. Somebody says, can we rent the Airbnb to ourselves? Well, what you're really doing is you're renting it to the corporation. I wouldn't do it to you, because then if you're less than 7 days or less, you are an active business.
Right.
So it gets a little.
And that goes back to, if you're renting to your S-corp or corporation, you're renting it out 365 days a year.
Now, the other thing is, if we eliminated all that, and all we were looking at is having a second house, then you could do a second house. You could just treat that as a second home. You get to write off the individual, what you'd be ordinarily entitled to anyway. If they're in Maryland, they're probably going over the SALT deduction. So I'm thinking they're not going to get the real estate tax. Mm-hmm. They're not going to get a lot of it. But you could still have a second house as a vacation house. I would still put it in an LLC. Somebody says, I bought my first property and have 3 rooms rented out. I'm wondering ballpark how much I'd have to pay in taxes if I brought in $20,000 a year in rent and pay about $18,000 in expenses, including mortgage, utilities, repairs, HOA. I do not have the home. Would there be a best way to mitigate my taxes? So you're bringing in $20,000 and you're paying out $18,000. Just tells me that you're not going to have a problem. The way that real estate works is, land equals no depreciation. And depreciation is a fancy way of saying a deduction. The improvement equals depreciation, which equals deduct. And so when you have an improvement, let's just say it's residential property. Mm-hmm. How long are you writing that off?
27 and a half years.
That's the default, 27 and a half years. So the way you look at it, Tyler, is you look at whatever that cost of the improvement on it, and you're going to divide that up by 27 and a half years, and you may knock it out. Now, we can actually accelerate a big chunk of this if you want to, and accelerate parts of it from to 5, 7, 15 years, or take that whole chunk in 1 year. Like you can get a whole bunch over that period of time. You could wipe out a lot of income. If you have any other rentals, maybe that works. Or if you're a real estate professional, there may be a reason to do that, to take and create passive loss that you'd be exempt from treating it as passive. You'd be able to treat it as active and you'd be able to get a big tax benefit. Somebody said, what about a building? Doesn't that get depreciation? Yes, the building gets the depreciation. So if it's non-residential, it's 39 years. It's residential, it's 27 and a half.
Yeah, so we use the word improvements in this form that if you ever look at your tax bill, they consider anything built on the land to be an improvement. So it's going to be all that depreciable property.
Mm-hmm. Somebody says, I was recommended to place a few new storage facilities in a family limited partnership for family member that have lower brackets than my LLC that I have. Victor, they own it then. And since it's a limited partnership, it's never going to be anything other than passive. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it, but you also have a gift because you gave them that interest.
Yep.
So unless they did it. So there's quite a bit. There's quite a bit going on there. I'm saying I would never do that. That's just me, because there's too many consequences. So if somebody's just doing that out of the heck, then you need to have a real good plan. They might be doing the limited partnership because that way they don't have control and you're trying to place it, but you got to be real careful. You have $15,000 a year per participant or per beneficiary that you can give a gift to without having to file a gift tax return. So husband and wife, in theory, can give $30,000.
Right.
Even if you have a bunch of other folks, you can do it. All right. Somebody says, can you guys cover the two qualifications for a real estate professional again, please? All right, so we're going to do it, then we'll jump into this question. The qualifications for a real estate professional. There's part one and part two. Part one has two parts. I'll just call it A and B. One spouse, I'm just writing these up, has to do 750 hours in real estate. Not your real estate, in real estate. Development, construction, redevelopment, et cetera, has to be more than 50% of their personal service. What's the biggest issue you see in these?
W-2s.
W-2s. You're a full-time employee someplace else, and you say, I'm a real estate professional. Well, it's not 750 hours. It's 750 hours plus has to be more than 50% of anything else you do. So if you have, let's say somebody's working, and they work 1,500 hours for an employer, how many hours would they need to do real estate?
To meet this test, 1,501 hours.
1,501 hours, exactly. So that gets some people. But this is one spouse. So either, I'll put it this way, either spouse can qualify for that. And it's just one of them. And it's not your properties. It's any real estate. So like you could be a developer. You could be a real estate agent. And boom, you're going to qualify for part one. Part two is you have to materially participate on your real estate, which means all of your real estate, you're going to have to make an aggregation election to treat it all as one activity. And then you just say, hey, there's about nine different tests. And it could be there's a 100-hour test, there's a zero-hour test, there's a 500-hour test, there's all these different tests. Not going to spin your head. And what you're doing is you're looking at it saying, are my passive activities, am I so involved in real estate that it's no longer fair to treat it as passive? I should get to take those passive losses and use it to offset my W-2 income, all that fun stuff. And then somebody says, if you qualify for real estate professional, one tax year, take a large deduction. Can you carry that over to future years where you don't qualify? Yep. It matters what year you created the loss. What you are the next year doesn't alter that loss. But what you can do under this CARES Act, Jeff, what do you think?
Well, you know, we just had this conversation with Eric from CostSeg about carrying, where we were doing a cost segregation in a year they were a real estate professional, and actually carrying that loss back to prior years when he wasn't a real estate professional.
Correct.
And you can absolutely do that, as crazy as it sounds.
It's an ordinary loss. So under the CARES Act, they gave us the ability to carry back 5 years.
Correct.
Your losses for 2018, 2019, or 2020. So for those of you who are on the cusp in 2020 and you paid a lot of taxes in 2019 or 2018 and you need to get a little shot in the arm with some extra money, maybe this is the year you do a cost seg, qualify as a real estate professional. And then says you have to be a real estate professional to do cost segregation. No, you do not. A lot of times we're just looking to offset the income coming from cost seg, like cost segregations. Again, we don't want to get too far. We've answered one question. No, I won't be here all night. and Jeff knows how this story ends. We're here, you know, seven. You want to make sure that you don't pay tax at your high bracket if you're getting rents. And so we can offset that pretty well. So I can take a property, like this is what we get all the time. You have somebody who has owned property for a long time. They have $50,000 or $60,000 a year hitting them that's coming through their Schedule E from their rental real estate. Everybody's looking at them going, hey, how do you make so much? Well, they got a bunch of real estate. They've had it for a while. Mm-hmm. But they don't have a depreciation to offset it. So it's going into their highest bracket. That's where somebody is really incentivized to go buy more real estate and then accelerate the depreciation. It wouldn't take that much. Maybe a $300,000 or $400,000 property would get the job done and offset the tax every year. What ends up happening is you are greatly incentivized to continue to acquire real estate. And then when you die, everything steps up in basis and you get to redepreciate it all over again.
Isn't life great, or death, whatever?
It is fantastic. And I was explaining that to a buddy of mine it was on Friday. Driving home, and you know, he had a financial planner having him gift a bunch of stuff. And I was like, what are you doing? I said, you've owned that real estate for a long time. Mm-hmm. You're going to give up all that step up. You're going to give up so much because you're worried about the estate tax.
Yep.
They were well underneath the max. But again, some financial planners, they read old books. Dying is the best strategy ever. Cures a lot of ills, right? Right. My company is an S Corp since 2015, but all business income has been paid to the owner's name and not the business name. What can I do? What say you, Jeff?
So if this has been happening since 2015, that's kind of hard to undo those old years. But if it's currently happening, if, for example, you're getting 1099s and checks issued to you personally instead of the S Corporation, we can nominate that income over to where it should have gone, assuming there was they just did it improperly. And we see this fairly often, to be honest with you. But it can't be something that occurs year after year after year. You have to do something to correct it.
So we've dealt with this a lot with real estate agents, where their state may say, hey, the broker cannot pay it into a company. And so the agent sets up an S Corp because it saves them quite a bit of money in tax. But mm-hmm. Probably a good 10% of their take home pay is going to be increased. And they look at it and they go, hey, I can't do it. It's not true. So the IRS has dealt with this issue. Two things are required to make this happen. And I'm just going to give you one of the options, and I'll give you two more. So option one, the cleanest way, is to write a letter to the broker saying the agent is under the exclusive control and employment of the S Corp, and that all the monies are being deposited to the S Corp. Number two, you enter into an employment agreement with the S Corp. I forget the case. It's either Flannery or Fleming or something like that. It begins with an F, and I have a hole in my brain because I always forget what the name of it is. The IRS, I think it's tax court, took the position that that's sufficient. As long as all the parties know what's going on, you're fine. Otherwise, you have an issue of assignment of income and you're not allowed to assign income. They say, oh, this is really bad. You have to pay tax on it. So that takes us to number two. Number two is the money goes to you. You file a Schedule C, which is a sole proprietorship as an individual, and you pay all of the money to your S Corp and you expense it. So you're going to zero out your S Corp or your Schedule C, mm-hmm. which is fine. You're at zero. You're not in a huge, like, you're not going to put a big bullseye on yourself when you're zeroing out of business. You put a huge bullseye on yourself when you lose money as a sole proprietor, because you have a section of the code called the hobby loss that says you do that 3 out of 5 years and they could reclassify you.
And what we typically do when we do that is we say pay to XYZ company, whatever the company name is, what their EIN is and all. So then they can match it up with the income reported to that company. Mm-hmm. We just like to be very clear about that this is why we're not reporting the income on the Schedule C.
So you'll do that?
Yes.
And what do you do?
Then we turn around. So we file the Schedule C exactly as she said, report all the income that was reported to you, and then have a one line say this money was nominated and reported by such and such S corporation.
That's cool. That works. So, I mean, essentially that was number three with me, was you just report it to the S corp and you say it was done in error. Is that essentially what you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's exactly right. So there's three ways, guys. The cleanest is always just to have it paid directly to the entity. But if you can't, there's not one, not two, but three options to make sure that you're not paying the tax on it. And the reason this is big, this is big, is because you get to pay Social Security, which is old age, disability, survivors, insurance plus Medicare, on all of your money that you make. I always joke that when I worked at McDonald's, they nailed me on every dollar I ever made there. Whereas an S corp does not. You pay a salary, and then there is no Social Security on profit, and that's flowing to you. So you just have to take a reasonable salary, which about one third is always going to get you there. Some of you accountants out there are going, no, we have to go to salary.com and all these others. Yeah, okay. Just rule of thumb, subject to your professional, but we've never had an issue with a third. And so if you're making 150, pay yourself a $50,000 salary. There's 100 that's hitting you. It's going to save you somewhere north of $10,000 a year. That's a pretty good reason to have an S corp in my book. Plus you have an accountable plan. Plus you have better, or the accountable plan is going to give you a lot of better reimbursements. Mm-hmm. Plus when you start taking a salary, it's really easy to do a deferral into a 401k. You're going to have benefits there. There's a bunch of other stuff. God, we have a lot of questions coming through. You guys are making my head spin. Let's go on to the next. Isn't that fun?
Yep.
So I enjoyed it. I miss this, Jeff. I was sitting in other places. I was sitting on a beach thinking about Jeff.
Wow.
All right. So just so I'm understanding correctly, in my previous question, do I take the value I bought the home for, 181, a year for depreciation, bringing in 20, and let's say the tax rate is 4,800, so taking the 6,000 off, would the IRS be paying me any additional amount? No. So, Tyler, so here's the deal. You're not writing off the amount that you paid for the house. You're only writing off the amount of the improvement. So technically, when you buy real estate, you're buying the land and whatever's on it. So it's usually, what would you say is a good ratio?
20-80 is usually a good ratio.
So 20-80. So your improvement's going to be about 80%. So let's just say 80% is 160,000 divided by 27.5. And you're looking at, I don't know what that is, 3,000 a year, 4,000 a year, 5,000?
Probably around 5,000 a year.
Yeah, a little over 5,000. So let's just say it's 5,000 a year. And your total revenue, I think you were $20,000 a year. So you'd subtract off the depreciation. You had your expenses, which I think if I remember his question was, he had about $2,000. So yeah, you're going to have a loss carry forward.
Right.
Which means you're going to use it. No, the IRS doesn't give you that money unless you're a real estate professional, in which case they're going to allow you to take whatever losses you have and apply it towards your W-2 income.
And keep in mind, IRS never gives you money. Well, they do sometimes, like with the earned income credit. But normally you have to have paid them money before they give you a refund of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
We run into that question more often than not. It's kind of surprising.
Well, in this case, you're just not going to pay any tax on the income you have. Like worst case scenario, Tyler, you're just going to be carrying that forward. So what's going to end up happening is you're just not going to pay tax. And then in future years, when as rents go up, which rents have gone up considerably over the last 10 years, like considerably, assuming that they keep coming up, then eventually you're just going to be sitting there going, hey, this is really cool. I'm getting all this money, but I'm not having to pay tax on it. Other thing is if you dispose of the property, it releases all of your loss carryforwards, your passive losses, and they become active.
Mm-hmm. Your losses. Correct.
So if you dump that property, you're going to get a little benefit. Somebody says, how best to shield capital gains on stock investment? So, and then also, will replay be provided to attendees? We always record these. So yes, you can go back and look at it. But capital gains, so here's the thing. Schedule A deductions, item miscellaneous itemized deductions, oops, are gone. So I'm kind of scribbling as I go today. Let's see if that gives me, yeah, right. So miscellaneous itemized are gone under the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. They got eliminated. So for those of you guys who like to play in the real estate or in the stock market, not so great. Like now we don't get to take our expenses. So the workaround on this is really simple. What you do is you create a partnership, and that's usually an LLC taxed as a partnership. Some of you guys are big LP fans. The only time I'm using limited partnerships these days is in flips in California to avoid excess taxes on the transaction. But let's just say that we have our stocks and bonds in the LLC. It's taxed as a partnership, which means you file a federal 1065 each year. I'm going to have a corporation, usually a C corp, sitting up here as a 1% or greater partner, maybe 20% up to about 20%. And again, I hate to say this, but it depends on your circumstances, how much money you have in this account. If it's 50,000, you know, we're probably going to go a little lower. If it's 200,000, or excuse me, if it's 50,000, we're probably going to go higher percentage. If it's 200,000, 300,000, 2 million, I'm probably going to go into the lower, but you can kind of just gauge it. But what this allows us to do is do what's called a guaranteed payment to partner. And that comes off the top. So if we make $20,000 and you were just an individual, mm-hmm. that would all flow down to you. If it's short-term capital gain, you're a trader, all of that hits you as ordinary income. If we are paying the corporation a guaranteed payment to cover your expenses, let's say that it ends up being $10,000, what ends up happening is the amount that flows down to you, take off that 10,000 and your percent gives us net income of $10,000. The corporation expensed all that. So we already got that. Let's say it's reimbursing me. Yay. Then we only have $10,000 net. Let's say that it's 99.1. That means that 99% of this number is going to you. And then the corporation gets to keep 1%. So it would get $100. That's it. That's how you do it. There's no other fancy way, schmancy way you could do that. And what are the expenses you can write off? Anything associated with managing your portfolio, including you can be doing other things inside that same entity.
And we like our preference is to write off those investment expenses in the corporation.
Yep.
Not in the partnership.
You're writing them off. The corporation is getting paid a guaranteed payment. Usually you put in there something like $1,000 a month and you pay it $1,000 regardless of whether you're making profit or not. Like you want to make sure that you're paying for these expenses. It's giving it back to you. Like if the partnership needs money, put more money in it. It just adjusts your capital account. It's not that big of a deal. So it works really, 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 really well. All right. So let's jump back. And again, these things are really, really simple. We've been doing the stock market stuff since the mid-90s, and it hasn't changed that much. So if somebody's going to try to get you to do they're going to say, hey, be a trader. Don't, unless you love getting audited and losing. Just do this. Does the brokerage account need to be in the name of the corporation? No, just the LLC. And frankly, we could put your brokerage account in a personal trust, like it acts just like a living trust, and we just make the LLC a beneficiary of it, so you don't have to confuse your brokerage house. And deductions, I could do, like if I'm trading in my home, I'm going to do an administrative office in my house,
right,
the entity. And before you guys think, oh, that's just a home office. No, it's not. There's no depreciation recapture. We're not limited to the goofy square footage. There's a bunch of different ways we can calculate that. Usually gets you, 15-20% of the value that you're paying on an annual basis. I mean, including cleaners and things like this. Like, again, there are many more benefits on the business side than there are on the personal side. I don't write the rules. I follow them. But if you're not looking at that, you just want to make sure. Somebody says, here's too many quiet people involved. I can see a question that's going back and forth, so I'm going to just answer this for Adrena. If I have a Wyoming entity and I want to have a C or an S corporation there, do I have to reside there? No. So an entity can live in any state.
Right.
The most common are when you look at the Fortune 500s, they have a Delaware address. They may just have an office there for the registered agent and be doing business, principal place of business in your home state. Mm-hmm. But what we like to see when we're using Wyoming, because nobody can take it away from you and it's private, I would prefer that you use an administrative office there. So we actually have an address there in Wyoming that allows you to just accept your mail, do your record keeping there. We have personnel there. You have offices there, more than just a bare office. In other words, the court test is always, if I walked into it, would I think it's business? It has nothing to do with where you reside. Now, if you take a salary, that business may have to be registered in your home state for purposes of payroll only. It might be registered for tax purposes. That doesn't mean that you're registering it with the Secretary of State. It all varies from jurisdiction, but you know, maybe you do that. You can use something called a professional employer organization to do that if you need to take payroll, or if it's just you, just do it like an Intuit or something like that. And all they care about is you're going to have to do payroll and do your withholding in that state. So it ends up working out really good. Sorry, Jeff, I'm hobarting questions again. Here you go. You can do this one. If I sell a piece of land and keep the primary house, what is the 1031 value? Zero or the 150 purchase price in 2012?
Well, of course, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to have to parcel off this piece of land, which I'm guessing you've already done. But it's neither zero or 150. Actually, what I would suggest you do is you get that piece of property appraised.
Each parcel.
And that's a good point. You can actually get them both appraised at the same time. The parcel you're keeping, the parcel you're getting rid of. And then they will give you a value of the land that you're parceling off. And your whole point of getting appraised on both is that you actually need to find the ratio between the two of them.
You need a basis. So when you 1031, it means you're not going to pay the, let's say they have the land and a primary house, and it's not your personal house. Mm-hmm. So this is an investment property. If this was your personal home, you wouldn't do it. If this was your personal home, you would have a 121 exclusion anyway, so we wouldn't do it. But let's just say this is an investment property. You want to keep the house, but you're going to sell the back acreage. When a 1031 is done, the new property gets the basis of the previous property. So you have to know what that basis is. So you're going to need to be able to figure out what that 150 is allocated towards.
Right.
And yeah, you can keep it. 1031 exchanges are wild. I've seen people sell their own LLC in interest to another member of the LLC and 1031 exchange it. And I was like, gosh, I didn't realize you could do that until you actually see some weird search situations. You're like, oh, man. All right, we need to keep busting along because we're dragging. All right. Somebody keeps asking about the real estate professional hours. What is counted towards real estate, the hour requirements, Mr. Webb?
When you're talking about the 750 hours, that is going to be real estate activities. Mm-hmm. You listed a couple. What they do not include is real estate financing in particular. Mm-hmm. So you can't include those. For the other test, for the individual property, that is going to be your actual activity, either spouse, on that property.
Mm-hmm. So would you be able to count, like if they're doing webinars, things like that, would they be able to count it?
That's a good question.
I'm asking you.
I don't have one you can. I think the webinars, like the real estate webinars and all, you could count towards the 750. I don't think you could count it towards the property, individual property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a lot of times they'll allow you, like certain things, they'll say you have to actually be doing activities with regards to the management of the properties. I think that would be the case for material participation. For the 750 hours, I think it's anything in real estate that's mm-hmm. involving real estate, anything in your business. So they don't really care. But when you're actually doing material participation, you're going to actually have to be involved in the management of your entities. Now, remember, if you're self-managing, you don't have an hour requirement. If somebody else is managing your properties for you, you just have to do more than 100 hours and more than them. And if you have a lot of properties and people are exceeding 100 hours, you need to make sure you and your spouse equal 500 hours or more.
Yeah, and if you have a bunch of properties that you're aggregating together, this test actually becomes much easier. It's just when you have one property, when things are going smoothly, you may not find that you don't have a whole lot to do with that property.
Yeah.
You go collect the rent every month.
You just go get it. All right. This is going to answer somebody else's questions because they were asking about the RV. Can I write off an RV if I use it for business travel? So what are the requirements?
You can write off an RV in a couple different ways. If you're going to put in your business, it really, this is my personal opinion, it needs to be 100% business.
You have some traps when you have a, some people try to use it as an entertainment facility and things like that. If you use it personally, you destroy that.
Right.
We never just put it in there and say it's 100% business. But an RV can be a second home. And if you're using it personally, that's not a bad thing, right? Because now we're writing off
absolutely not
the investment or some of the interest and things like that.
Example, so my son bought a camper, fifth wheel, and he's got a loan on it, but it's got a toilet, it's got a place to cook, and it's got a bed.
That's
so,
all.
So it qualifies as a second home.
Boats qualify too, guys. Anything that what Jeff just said is so important. It's cooking, going to the bathroom, and sleeping quarters.
Right. And why that's important, if it has all three, it qualifies as a second home for mortgage interest. So any interest my son is paying on that camper gets counted towards Schedule A deductions.
Now, if you like to double dip, do you like to double dip?
I like to double dip. Oh,
Jeff likes to skinny dip.
Nobody wants to see that.
I don't know. I'm curious.
Oh, my.
You're 6 feet away, right?
Yeah.
All right. So you can write. This is where you double dip. In all seriousness, you can do the 57.5 cents. I think it's 2020 mileage deduction if you're using it for business. So it's not uncommon for someone to say, "I don't want to fly," or "I'm going to use." I had a friend that was an attorney who would bring. He called it his war wagon. He would drive to his trials. You can use your facility as travel. You can always use anything for travel.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're zipping around the country, and let's say you put 1,000 miles on it, that's worth, what, $775. What I would suggest everybody use is something called Mile IQ so that you can do that. Now, that has nothing to do with your home deduction as well. And this is why I say you can get a little bit of double dip in there, which is fine. Because you can write off the any of the interest, and plus you can get your reimbursement. Now, I'm with Jeff. I would not put it in a business, and my reason is a little different. My reason is because anytime you're personally using a business asset, there's a potential for a tax hit. Mm-hmm. And when you have vehicles, then that tax hit is its lease value, fair market value, and they put it on a sliding scale, and RVs are pretty valuable. So you could be getting hit on an annual basis, depending on how much percentage use you have. Let's say I'm using it half for business. I could be seeing a $6,000 inclusion of income that I'm having to pay expenses on. And then someone just hit it. Joyce, you're absolutely right. You're in the business. You have an accident. It's in the business. Plus the insurance is more expensive. Commercial insurance is more expensive because you could do it.
And I get why you would want to put it in the business. Because the deductions are very lucrative. You're talking $100,000 RV that you can write off in the entire thing in the first year.
You do the math. Maybe it's beneficial for you. Maybe you're in a really high tax bracket and you say, you know what, Toby, I know what, Jeff, twist your arm. Let's buy it in the business. We're going to use it for business. We're going to have 30% that we're going to use it for. You got to be more than 50% business, by the way. So let's just say, hey, I'm going to use it for my business a lot. I know I'm going to use it. Maybe you're going off to sites and you're using it as your mobile office. Under that circumstance, let us run the numbers. And then somebody says, is it a second location? You don't want to rent it because then you have income.
Right.
So somebody says, what if the RV is for a nonprofit? Same situation. We still run it. It's not uncommon. Again, there's plenty of places where they use RVs as mobile office places, especially in the nonprofit arena. You're going to see a lot of blood drives, all these other things, but they're not using it personally. You're not driving around the bloodmobile going through Yosemite.
Yeah, nonprofit is even more problematic because by its very nature, since it's in the nonprofit, you cannot use it for personal at all.
Right. We want to make sure that, well, if you did, it's included in your, you have an income inclusion.
Okay.
So it's, again, yeah, the little IRS chart. You could do that with any, and then somebody says, would a boat also qualify? Yes. Cabin cruiser? Yes. You can do 280A with these guys.
I've had people come and say, hey, can I use my Boda's my administrative office. And I'm like, does it ever leave the dock? No.
I would do the 280A. 280A is going to get you if you're having your business meetings right there. So I would make sure, because we have people that do this. I'm thinking of one in particular, Pat, who will have uses his boat almost exclusively for entertaining clients. And he did get audited and he had to prove it. But that was a different test. He was trying to get the business write off. I would much rather you have the corporate meeting and somebody says, yeah, do you do a corporate meeting in the RV? Yes, but bring other people. Make sure it's not just you and a spouse. Bring some other investors along. If you like real estate, like, make it a day. Get the real value out of it, and that's tax-free money.
So going back to what you said, though, about using the boat or RV for entertainment purposes, did TCJA knock that out?
For entertainment, yes.
Okay.
No, wait, there's one exception. You're going to make me go into the recesses of my brain. No, if it's solely for the benefit of the employees, then I believe you can still do it. So, but it's entertainment, like entertaining clients, you can't do it. But a non-taxable benefit to the client, to your employees, yes. Can you court rent your home 14 days, each of your multiple LLCs? No. Dennis, we take the position that you get 14 days as a taxpayer, even though it says it's per residence. So technically you should be able to do, you know, home number one, 14 days, home number two, but that's not the way the courts have interpreted. Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. Let's see. Somebody's asking about, let me see. There was somebody that got disconnected. Matt. All right. I've done 4 flips over the last 3 years with mixed results, mostly lost money. I have put flips on hold for now. You're in a weird marketplace, Matt, so I don't blame you. My C Corp currently manages 1 rental property and runs at an operating loss. I'm single, making W-2, making pretty good money. And I've been doing well with option trading. I'm not going to go over that. I'd like to do a partnership LLC to distribute some of the profits to the C Corp. What percentage can I go? 75, 25? Yes. Can I add it to the LLC? You could, but you don't have to. Unless she's going to contribute money, Matt, you could actually just have mom on the board and start covering some of her expenses. You are in the exact scenario of why we like seeing multiple businesses being used in those corporations, because you can have business one losing and business two profiting, and business two is dumping the money, deducting the money going into the business to cover the shortfalls in the others. And that's perfectly okay if you set it up right. Almost every Fortune 500, they call that research and development. They're experimenting, like all their divisions that they're trying something new on, they're using the profits from the profitable divisions.
Right.
And that's not uncommon.
The cash cows.
Yep. I think that was in Batman too, where he had like the one off the books that was losing all the money. And it was Morgan Freeman's mad scientist section or whatever.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
The Batmobile. All right. What do we got? What is the right way to move money in and out of an LLC? Do I move personal funds to the business account and then pay the expenses?
Oh, can I say it this time? It's going to depend.
You can be a lawyer.
It's going to depend on how that LLC is being taxed. Mm-hmm. If it's a partnership or disregarded to you personally, you can move money in and out all day long. It's just contributions and distributions. You can always contribute or loan money to the S Corps and C Corps, even if they're LLCs. And I kind of prefer the lending money, because that money can be pulled back out just as a loan repayment. Mm-hmm. But as far as pulling money out that may be profit or pulling out appreciated property, stuff like that, that's especially problematic in the S and C corporations.
If you are a partnership or a disregarded LLC, it's a safe. And the fact of the matter is, if you open up your safe and you put cash in it, there's no tax. If you open up the safe and pull the cash back out, there's no tax. The second you make it a taxpayer, now I'm paying somebody else. And it's like Jeff and I, if it's just me and I just have a safe, I don't have to worry about taxes. The second I say, hey, Jeff, I'm going to start paying you, then we have to classify it right. If I loan money to Jeff, he pays no tax on it unless I forgive it. If I pay Jeff, here's a dollar for your services, that's taxable. That's the difference. In an S corp, it's a little bit of a hybrid because you have your again, anytime you're buying shares in a company, I guess I would put it, then there could be zero tax implication. We just want to be careful. Let's go to this real quick. Matt, yes, 25% ownership in the partnership LLC. Somebody asks, does it matter whether it's an S or a C corp as the partner? Only to the extent that I want to be able to zero out that corporation, or if you're a high income earner, I want to keep that income from hitting you. And a high income earner in my book is somebody making probably 300 and above, because we're getting to the point where you're into 30%, depending on your state, you may be getting close to 40 to 50% tax. And I'd rather sit in a C corp and pay 21% and have access to that money. In other words, I'm still okay paying the tax. I'm going to pay half as much, which means I have more money at my disposal, but it's sitting in an entity. To be real technical, if you guys like this stuff, by the way, this is the year to do it. You can give 100% of your money away to a charity, period, and have no tax. And then that charity can be yours. So you're taking it and putting it into something that you control, you don't own because nobody owns a charity, but you still have access to those funds. And so some people choose to do that. They look at it and say, look, if I kept this $200,000, I'm going to pay 100 of it to the tax man, either federal or state. And I don't want to do that. So I'm going to take the 200, I'm going to give it to my own charity, and I'm going to use it for good things later on. Maybe they're going to take a salary out of it in the future, something like that. Maybe they're kids. Maybe they're doing housing. Maybe they're doing a project that they really care about. I do. I have two. One's a sanctioning body in the state of Nevada for USMTA. The other one is a stewardship organization. Both of those, I can write a check for at any time. I can get it done. Yeah, so it's only this year, Joyce, the 100%. Otherwise, it's 60%. If you guys like this stuff, by the way, this is a good segue because we just completed and finished up and are ready to start shipping the tax toolbox. So if you like the concepts, we put it together in 22 pieces, 22 videos on all the different ways to structure your and use the tax code to your benefit. So there's a whole bunch. I go into the individual tax, and this isn't, you're like, I'm the speaker, but this is, we have a really great tax division here that Jeff oversees. How many tax professionals are you sitting on right now? That are
I think we're at 31 right now.
Yeah, plus all the administrative staff and everything else. And they do a bang up job. Taxes are really tough right now because people aren't coming into that profession at a great, we're losing more than we're gaining in the profession. So they're becoming more and more worth their weight in gold, but it's really tough to find good creative tax people who really want to save money for their clients. And we're really lucky. So Jeff does a great job. If you do this, by the way, here, I'll just say this, you get a whole bunch of stuff that your brain food, you're going to be able to go through it. And here's the thing, until you do it, until you hear all the differences and you see all the different options, you don't realize what you've been missing. That's the hard part. You almost have to kind of sit down and go through it. So the tax toolbox, I'll give you guys the link. We're going to do an initial offer, and I'm going to pair it up with the TaxWise workshop that's coming up. I believe it's going to be in the first week of December, like December 1st or 2nd or something like that. I usually try to do them in November, but I'm all over the place in November. So they said, let's do it right away in December. We want to do it towards the end of the year. And I want it to be after the election. I want to see what's going on. So we're going to give you the TaxWise tool workshop, which will more than likely 99.9% be virtual, and the tax toolbox for $495. So this is an initial offer. So if you guys know how this, it's hours and hours and hours. My daughter makes me many more times in real estate versus using her master's degree in taxation that she earned at Golden Gate. So she's helping you more than you ever paid for it, because she's sitting there saving you a bunch of money, right? Some of you guys are talking about platinum, et cetera. This is a price this is gonna be the lowest price set, period, because I like my Tax Tuesday group. So you don't like, yes, if you're a platinum, you're still gonna get the same price, but this is the deal. Not seeing the screenshot, the same thing. This is the link to it, by the way. And the $495 that's going to be offered does not include Tax Tuesday, except for the tax to, or excuse me, does not include TaxWise, except for the Tax Tuesday crowd. So we're going to give you both. So you're going to get tax wise, you're going to get the videos, you're going to get all that. I'm not going to spend much more time on this. You're going to get tax wise, and the total amount is $495. So I'm just going to let Patty or somebody put the link up there. And guys, we don't play around with today only or anything like that. I'm just making this for the Tax Tuesday folks.
So, this isn't the next 20 callers in the next 10 minutes?
Nope. Okay. None of that. This is you guys. All right. Yeah, Platinum is, this is not included in Platinum. This is a very specific and unique product. Now, there's lots and lots of stuff in Platinum that helps you on taxes, but this is a brand new spanking, working on it for 2 years, finally got it out, product. So we want to make sure that you guys have something easy. If you like it, is it tax deductible? Of course, you buy it through your business. As an individual, you don't get to write off tax stuff anymore because there's no more miscellaneous itemized deductions. When you watch the Tax Toolbox, you'll get that drilled into your head. All the stuff that went away goes over all the tax credits. It goes through here. I'll just put that back up so you guys are asking. It goes through all the tax credits and everything else. It's individual tax. It's personal tax. It's how they work together. It's business taxation. And it is nonprofit, all of it rolled into one, because what we're doing is I'm trying to make sure that you see, you have a full, complete experience and you get an idea of all the different tax angles so that when you're looking at it, you're not missing pieces. It's like doing a puzzle. If you don't have the piece, it's really tough to do the puzzle. All right. How does a trust work in relationship to an LLC in real estate?
If we're talking like land trust, the primary role here is to give you anonymity. Your name's not on the property. The LLC's name is not on the property in the county records. Mm-hmm. The land trust's name is on the county records. This is especially nice in California because California doesn't charge that $800 LLC fee to LLCs that are mm-hmm. owned by the beneficiaries of trust.
So a land trust is a fancy way of saying a trust that owns land. It's a revocable trust. This isn't an irrevocable trust. This isn't a mm-hmm. asset protection trust or things like that. It's just land trust. And if you go back to Illinois where they started, you're just doing two pieces. You have the title and you have beneficial ownership. So for example, let's say that Jeff was on title. Chirf. What did I do? Let's say that I have Jeff on title. But I get the right, Toby gets the right to rent it, and I get the right to all the rents. Which would you rather be?
I want the right to rent.
I want the right to rent, right. We don't care about being on title. That just means it's nothing. So when we do this, what we're doing is, what Jeff is absolutely saying is, you can get your name off of it. If you don't want to get your name off it, you can put your name on it. So you could just say, hey, whatever, use an entity. What I really care about is getting the LLC, getting my beneficial ownership into the LLC, but I don't have to let anybody know. The only state that requires the listing of the beneficiary is Arizona, and there's no remedy if you don't do it. It's the remedy is for the beneficiary. So unless you feel like suing yourself, there's nothing. So what we can have is an LLC out there that's owning real estate, and it does not have to list the LLC on the real estate. And your name's not listed. And I cannot overstate this enough. And I'm sure that when Michael was on, he probably stressed this as well. The best tool in asset protection is people don't know you have it.
Right.
Period.
They can't take something from you that they don't know you have.
Exactly. If they don't know what it is, where it is, or that you even have it, they're not going to try. And the reason I know this is because I've never seen a homeless person drug into court and subjected to after judgment, subsequential proceedings where they're trying to figure out what they own. There's actually a term for it. I'm blanking. All right. There's a whole bunch of questions here. Jeez. But who goes to L&T court? Who is the landlord? The land trust might be, you may be the trustee, or you just put it on the lease. Usually the landlord's entering into the lease, so it's going to be the landlord. So it could be the management company if you have a management company. If you don't have a management company, it could frankly be, I'm usually going to have a management company. It's like if I was structuring it, I would have a corporation be the management company, or I'd have an actual management company. That's who's going to court. Can you have a primary home exemption if property is owned in a land trust? Yes, it's the same as a living trust. So the land trust would be owned by the LLC. Technically, trusts aren't owned. The beneficial interest is going to be assigned to the LLC. And it can, depending on the trust agreement. So when we do these, we do Illinois style land trust. The reason we're using that terminology is because most attorneys know what that means. We're giving the beneficiaries the right to control the properties. Sometimes we could do the opposite, where we give the trustee the right to control the property, and that's not what kind of trust we're using. Can I build my personal residence under my LLC for liability protections? You can, and it really depends on your state and how much it's worth. Somebody says, hey, I have those. You guys set it up. I just need to connect the dots. Absolutely. If there's about a two-year learning curve in anything. In fact, there's really good studies that show that a learning curve takes 20 hours to get really good at something. It doesn't matter whether it's guitar or any activity, that about 20 hours gets you decent at it to where you can function. And I don't think that running a business is any different. So the big thing for us is just to get you answering or asking questions and get you using it, and then you get comfortable. And there's just a little bit of time. Sometimes it takes a year, 2 years. If you've already done it, you're already comfortable, you've run other people's businesses, or you've been in other people's businesses, then you're fine. Somebody says, I'm in California. Is it true that the $800 franchise fee isn't needed? Yeah, Jeff, we've actually won that at audit. Jeff loves it when I say this, not this Jeff, that Jeff, or that Jeff, or this Jeff. No. So what happens is California charges an $800 franchise. They don't think it's a tax, but the courts say it's a tax on any entity that's doing business there for the privilege of doing business in California. When you use a trust, there is no $800. And then what California does is they say, well, if you have an LLC that's out of state, so let's say it's Wyoming, and it's owned by a California resident, then they want to charge the $800 fee to the LLC because they say, oh, it's being controlled by a California individual, it's owned by a California individual. They try that nonsense. And so you just make sure that the trust goes like this. And if there's a piece of property, it's actually going this way. And then the Wyoming entity is held by a living trust or another trust, not you. And we actually won that on audit. No, we don't advertise that because we don't want everybody trying to do it, because we just know what the franchise tax board will do, which is they'll just pass a new law that says any trust now is subject to the $800. They've lost in court on grantor trusts outside the state, but I wouldn't put it past them. So I don't want to tempt fate. How do I add my LLC to our living trust? Are there tax consequences?
Seems like you were just talking about this.
Yeah.
It's actually very simple to add your LLC to your living trust. You just have to deed your interest in the LLC to your living trust.
Yeah. If we set up your living trust, we already included an assignment in there that you just complete. If you don't, if you're platinum, we're just going to give it to you. I have a very simple one where I assign all my businesses. It's real easy. And Kimberly, what I would do is I'd have your LLC owned by your living trust. If you don't want to pay California, and I'm not going to say don't pay California, I'm just going to say if you don't want to, there's a way to do it. It's aggressive, and they may bark at you if they ever see it. If it's a disregarded LLC, we don't have to worry about it. If it's a partnership, you're probably going to pay the $800. And I always say pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. Pay it on one. Give them a little piece. Let's go back
to that. Yeah, going back to the second part of this question, are there tax consequences? A living trust is considered a revocable trust, which means you can always undo it. Mm-hmm. So the IRS ignores it.
So there's no tax consequences. Yeah, when you have a revocable, you could get it done. I mean, you could potentially have a tax. If you have a irrevocable trust, you could have a problem. If you have an revocable trust, then you have no problem because you can always undo it. I've never seen, there's one state where I've seen a tax consequence, and that's Pennsylvania. And that's when you're transferring property into it. And they have some really weird, goofy rules. Somebody says they love us. We love you too. They have a weird rule as far as the residual interest. So the distribution, my partner Clint is really good on that. We've gone to battle with them. We've lost a couple. We've won a bunch. What they do is they look at the document. So when we do it ahead of time, we can make sure that you're out of harm's way. if somebody comes in and they've already done it and they're trying to undo it, sometimes we can unring the bell, sometimes we can't. It just depends on the trust document. But the exception is supposed to be for living trust, but they look at the language of the living trust. So it's kind of weird, but that's the only place. Somebody says, does a platinum member living in Washington have to use a Washington attorney to update their trust, or could we use you guys? We are Washington attorneys on staff. Clint, we have an office in Tacoma, so we're fine. Technically, you could do trust work anywhere. It depends on where your sit is. But anyway, we can absolutely help you, Dennis. Patty can get you in touch with the appropriate parties. What else we got? Can you take depreciation on a rental condo? What do you use for the basis? I like that. It's basis. What can you use for the basis?
So yes, you can take depreciation on a rental condo.
What if you're renting it? This is what's weird. You read things and I read things and we see them all the time. And I'm wondering whether they're saying, if I rented a condo, can I depreciate it?
So if you're the tenant, no. If you are the landlord of if you own the condo, and to be clear, timeshares do not fall in this category. They cannot be depreciated because technically you don't own it. Anyway, yes, you can depreciate a condo that you are renting out to others. Mm-hmm. And the courts have kind of gone back and forth on whether or not you own the land. IRS's position is even if you live on the 20th floor of the condominium building, you still own a portion of the common areas. But I've seen it go both ways. So we would generally say your basis is going to be whatever you paid for that rental property. What are you writing down there?
I'm writing the owner, yes, you can depreciate. Land equals no, you don't depreciate the land. If it's investment property, then you can depreciate the improvement.
I personally kind of like to put a small, if you paid $100,000 for a condo, put a small portion, 5% or whatever, to land and depreciate the rest, just for safety's sake.
Somebody says, can you depreciate a pre-construction condo? No, it's not in service yet. You got to put it in service.
Yeah, that's something we don't ever talk about, that depreciation starts once the item is placed in service.
And somebody's helping us. They said undivided portion of the land equals non-deductible, correct. So you have condos on the water, by the way, just because you say land and sea. The land, because they do that in Lake Washington. I used to have a boat that I lived on there, and they had condos. In fact, a lot of places they do it, where you get your boat slip, and it's cooperatives, it's condos. Somebody says, what if the appraised value is higher than the purchase price? Can you use the appraised value as basis? No.
Actually, the opposite happens. So if you have a property that you bought 10 years ago and the value has gone down since then, you have to use that lower value.
Oh, yeah. If you put it into service.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, this is a good one. When you have a house and you want to increase your basis, you can sell it to your own escort.
That's true.
All right. We're running too far, which is fun stuff. All right. Let's go on to the next one. What are the main differences between an escort and a C-corp?
C-corp is its own entity. I keep wanting to say just like an individual, but it's its own taxable entity, its own legal entity. S-corp is kind of a hybrid between the partnership and the C-corp. It has the benefits of both.
Mm-hmm. You like it when I start growing, don't you?
Yeah, sir. I stop talking and start watching what you're doing.
So S-corp flows to shareholders. The reason I was going to draw it up is because that you might go into the LLC side, pays taxes on its own profits. So a C-corp pays taxes on its own profits at 21%, flat tax. You could have, by the way, these could be a corp or LLC taxes a corp in either one of these situations. As you guys, if you've been here before, you know, an LLC does not exist to the IRS. You have to tell it what it is. What other big changes, differences would you say from a tax standpoint?
Between an S and a C, the S is going to pass its income directly through to its owners. It doesn't pay its own taxes.
And then medical benefits for insurance or any medical, anybody that's greater than 2% shareholders, it equals income. W-2, right?
Yeah, typically we just don't deduct medical. So if you write off reimbursed medical expenses in the S corporation, we're not going to deduct those.
Yeah. On a C-corp, you can expense medical, dental, and vision at 100%.
Correct.
With an S corp, you cannot. And as an individual who owns an S corp, you can only write off as self-employed the insurance premiums you pay. So if you have a whole bunch of deductibles, copays, things that aren't covered, you can't write them off.
Correct. Those are your out-of-pocket expenses.
Yeah, those are some big ones. The other one is if you make a charitable donation through an S corp, it flows down to the shareholders and is carried on their level. Whereas the C corp, you're capped. This year, it's 25%. Mm-hmm. Normally, it's 10% of net profit.
And before 18, it was 5%. It was really low.
And so, what a lot of C corps would do is they would do sponsorships of charities because then you can write it off as advertising. And it's still not uncommon for corporations to prefer that because they don't want a charitable deduction. So those are the big differences. Usually when we're looking at a business, a lot of times they say, should I be one or the other? And the answer is actually, I may use both. And so you may have, for example, in a professional service. So let's say this was a doctor, dentist, real estate agent, consultant. You may see that being an S corp so that we don't do any harm. Maybe it's a whole bunch of money, but you may have it being managed by a C corp, and that same C corp may be managing a holding LLC, and it may be managing a stock account in another LLC. You guys seeing how this works? So that you're able to kind of control, here's you down here, and you're kind of sitting on all sides. Yeah, I have income that's going to flow to me. It's going to have income that's going to flow to me. I have this income. And so all I'm doing is moving it off of me if I need to. And it works pretty well. And it's much easier to operate. Like that stuff sometimes makes people anxious the first time they see it. The whole idea is that it's only uncomfortable because you've never done it. It's like a golf swing the first time you do it. It's a little uncomfortable, but there's a right way to do it. And that's the right way to do it. And then over time, it becomes very comfortable. All right, so we have a few more questions. If you buy a fix and flip, like I shouldn't say a few, we probably have 100 questions
right now. You meant a few hundred, right?
Yeah, they're getting, you guys are active today. You guys should see what these screens look like. It just looks like spaghetti of writing. If you buy a fix and flip under an LLC, and your wife then decides to make it your main residence, can you use any of the expenses as a write-off, or does it all get added to basis?
Every bit of it goes to basis, anything that went into that property.
Yeah, but this is the thing. So when you have an LLC and it's just yours, then we don't care. It all goes to basis. But if that's an LLC taxed as a corporation, you really should buy it from the corporation, even on an installment sale or something.
Oh, I agree with that.
Yeah, and then establish your own basis and allow some of that money to go to the corporation to cover its expenses, et cetera, just the way. There's some thank yous to our guys. Tibby is doing a good job. So hopefully you guys are getting your questions answered. I purchased 2 condos overseas. Can I depreciate it? And what do I have to report to the IRS for overseas purchase?
I don't know of anything that would prevent you from treating those foreign rental properties as the rental property, period.
The IRS doesn't care where it is.
No. The only big thing I'm aware of is those properties are not eligible for 1031 exchange for a property in the U.S., but other than that, you would just treat them like ordinary income.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be rental.
Well, when I say ordinary, as normal income is what I was going for, and I said the wrong word.
But no self-employment tax or anything.
No.
Still rental income. Just so you guys know, just for fun, just for giggles, if you ever get into a conversation with somebody, there's really 3 types of income. We oftentimes, and I do this too, I'm guilty of it, but a lot of practitioners just look at it and say, there's active and there's passive. And that's technically not true. There's active, passive, and portfolio. Mm-hmm. And the passive is when you own a business that you don't do anything in, that you don't materially participate in. So you're the hands-off owner. You're the silent partner. You invest in something. The problem is that's passive losses. So if you have like an S corp that you're a shareholder in, but you don't do anything, you have passive losses. If it kicks losses down to you, a lot of people will try to take those. And it's like, no, that's just like real estate. Real estate's the other passive activity. Active activity is anything that you do to generate income. So it's anything you do with your labor, with your own energy. So it's being a sole proprietor. It's getting W-2 wages. It's all those things. And then you have portfolio income, which is royalties, dividends, interest, and capital gains. Not subject to old age, death, and survivors, but very different. Capital losses are treated differently than losses from other portfolio income.
Right.
So, yeah, I wish it was way straightforward, but it's not. And then somebody says, how long is the promotion on the tax toolbox? Don't worry. It's not going away. For you guys, you could use that at any time. Now, that said, do it sooner than later. Just teasing. What are the advantages of making my future trading account an LLC? So futures are going to have that 6 and 40.
Right. And he's talking about 60% is, I always get this backwards, 60% long-term, 40% short-term.
Yep. Whether you held it for a day or long or futures contracts, if this is short-term capital gains. If you don't know the difference, this is 0, 14, 20. This is your ordinary bracket, but you don't get to write off any expenses. So when you put an LLC around this guy, same situation. We have a C corp or an S corp. I mean, you just say a C corp, and it has a percentage. And this is a 1065. This is a partnership, LLC, LP. Then we have the corporation owner percentage. Now we can get our expenses out. Otherwise, you're hosed. So what are the advantages of putting a futures account? You could actually write off your expenses. It also keeps it away from Lawyer Snoop's Uncle Sam, right? No, I should say right. Uncle Sam. Lawyers and Snoops, because you can keep your name off it. You can make it to where nobody can take it from you.
So question about going back to the old Trading Places movie. Say I sell orange juice at $50, whatever the size is. Mm-hmm. But it turns out to fulfill that order, I have to buy that orange juice at $100. By having an LLC, is that going to protect me personally?
It has. So you're talking about doing kind of a margin.
Yeah.
You're putting yourself on an obligation. So actually, we had that precise scenarios, not just on this, but also on margin calls. And when I first got into this business, we would set up the LPs, limited mm-hmm. partnerships, because they didn't accept LLCs in all states. You remember those days.
Yeah, I remember those days.
So you would set it up. And if they didn't get a personal guarantee, they were toast. And we had somebody with about $500,000 margin call when the tech bubble burst, and they walked away from it because it was an LLC. Now, is that a good thing? Me personally, I don't want to get into judgment on it, but it right. saved them from taking a major hit. That was the brokerage company giving them unfettered access to margin, and they gave them a lot of rope to hang themselves. And it was pretty interesting.
I'm assuming the trading companies have learned something since then.
Yeah, now they always say, no, it's you. They don't generally like to do things that cost them a bunch of money. We have a lot of questions, but we're way over, so I'm just going to zip on through here. Is a family limited partnership, irrevocable trust, or LLC better for small business?
I mean, you could do it in an irrevocable trust, but I don't think I would. That trust, is it going to be subject to UBIT?
It depends on how it's taxed.
Yeah, okay.
So typically, you have some business trusts that float around out there that operate. I would never do it like a traditional business for a small business. You're going to be an LLC, and you're either going to be taxed as an S corp or a C corp, unless you are really, really, really small. And when I say small, I would say less than, I guess you put it this way, less than $30,000 a year, just because the money is almost always between a sole proprietorship and an S corp. It's not even close. The S corp is generally going to save you more than whatever its costs are when you're getting over 25, 20. It's right around $1,500 at 25,000. So it's like, just do the S corp. Anyway, don't do the limited partnerships are out of vogue. You still have some of the folks running around out there talking about them. It doesn't make sense. The LLC does a better job, gives you better protection, and doesn't have the downside of having the passive income limitation. So if I'm a limited partner, I could literally lose my real estate professional status by having a small portion of my income coming through a limited partnership. It's actually 10% of gross rents. And boom, I just hosed myself. So I want to be real careful with those. The only time I'm using this is for flips in California, or if I'm dealing with Canadians. Got to blame Canada. Surprised we haven't blamed them for the virus. Thought that was the mantra is blame Canada. They're pretty nice. They take it. All right, zip it on. Zippity doo-dah. Is it better to invest in oil and gas as an individual or in an LLC? What say you, Jeff?
I'm not crazy about oil and gas right now. There's a lot of companies, including Halliburton and Occidental and Williams Energy, that are all in trouble. They got more debt than they know what to do with. Mm-hmm. Okay. Off my soapbox. You can
write about the energy companies. They're the worst sector this year. They've just gotten torpedoed.
Oh, they have. Even the big ones like ExxonMobil.
I'm shocked at Exxon.
Yeah, they're in trouble.
Chevron, probably the best of all of them. Go ahead. Sorry.
So there are several ways to own oil and gas. You can own it through like a limited partnership, like Occidental or Atlantic Oil or Williams Energy is another one. Mm-hmm. You can own a royalty interest in oil and gas, where they basically send you a check every month. Uh-huh. And the third way is you own a working interest in uh-huh. that oil and gas company. If it's a working interest, you definitely need to be in an LLC.
The only problem is that you get this ordinary loss from the intangible drilling costs. I was scribbling that while you were talking. Mm-hmm. This is why a lot of people invest in oil and gas, is because they get an ordinary loss. So if I put in $100,000 in investment, there's a good chance I'm going to get a $80,000 deduction in year one. But I have to be at risk, and you have to be personally at risk.
Yep.
So if you're doing an LLC for oil and gas, you need to put in a provision to make sure you are still at risk, which is weird because usually you're using the LLC to not be at risk. But you need to be at risk for the actual exposure from that oil endeavor. You're not generally going to have anything that's going to come get you, like something bad happens on the property and they come after you. But you still have to be at risk. If you cut off the risk, you're going to really be put into a problem, because if you have a loss, you're not going to get to take it.
Yeah, the working interests are typically the most difficult to do, because you're receiving money from whoever is actually drilling the oil, but you're having to pay them back for their expenses. Mm-hmm. So you're actually switching checks between them. Mm-hmm. I know people who made lots of money in that a few years back until the oil market tanked.
Yeah, some of you guys are saying the oil field is hurting hard. The negative price a few weeks ago scooped. But yeah, there's a ton of bankruptcies in energy right now, which doesn't mean they're blowing away. It just means that they're seeking protection.
And what they're talking about with the negative price was there was such a glut of oil that there was no place to store it. So you were having to pay people to take your oil off your hands.
Somebody's asking some questions. Let's zip off. Hey, I have a dissolved flip LLC, which means that they flip something and they want to cut off their liability. Do I send share certificates to Anderson for storage? You can. And then you keep the deeds and the financial records. You have a requirement, I think, 7 years.
Yeah.
You just scan them and put them in your box. You can put them in the box folder with us. We'll store them for you. So many questions, but I know we're late. I'm trying to get through this, guys. Jeff just talks so dang much. Is there an option to give? And I was being facetious.
I know you are.
Is there an option to give employees a bonus without being charged a luxury tax?
If you're talking about employees in the Monopoly game.
What is a luxury tax?
The only luxury tax I'm aware of in real life is the one they had on boats and cars. And that's been at least 10 years ago.
So you can give bonuses to your employees. You're just going to be charged regular tax.
Yeah, here's the general rule. Anytime you give your employees any kind of cash, whether it's a bonus or a commission or a gift, that is subject to regular, normal, everyday payroll taxes.
Oh my gosh, we're doing the same question over. Hey, Eric, we answered the employee, the payment deferral starting today, and how do you opt into it? It's actually your employer. We went over it in the beginning just because we don't like it. Because technically, an employer who, if there's a deferral, you still owe it, and they're going to still owe it in the future. They're still going to owe it in the beginning of next year, which means you're going to have double withholding. But if the employee leaves before the end of the year, the employer could still be on the hook for the deferred payment. Or the IRS is going to say the employee owns it, and how are they going to go after the employee? They're going to go after the employer, which means the employer may have to go after the employee. It just is a stinky situation. So what we're saying is until they figured out I wouldn't do the deferral. It's just a temporary deferral. Some of you guys may do it, but I understand why you wouldn't, and I understand why you would. I'm just going to say I'm going to take the conservative route. But somebody says, question, for a real estate professional, would a Schedule E loss reduce modified adjusted gross income or just adjusted gross income?
Simple answer is you take the loss, so it's going to lower your taxable income, your AGI, your modified AGI.
All of it. Right. It comes after your calculation
right.
of modified adjusted gross income. So, yes. There we go. Sorry, I went right into those questions without even switching the slide, and I didn't really. This is an easy yes. You don't have to pay the luxury tax because it doesn't exist. This one. I have an LLC for my real estate business. How should I be paying myself through the business if I plan on filing as an S-Corp? So this is somebody smart. They figured out that an LLC is not a tax designation. So they're an LLC, taxed as an S-Corp. How should you pay yourself? You're going to want to pay salary. Do any payroll?
Yep.
What would you use, Jeff?
I like the 30%. That's what I'm using on my S-Corporation.
But what do you use Intuit? Do you use
I use QuickBooks for my... Oh, you mean for payroll?
Yeah.
I'm actually using ADP.
ADP. They're pretty good.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch. You got, what are all the big ones?
ADP, Paychex, and I'm sorry if I miss your payroll company. QuickBooks has their own payroll, but there's any number of them. Doing it by hand, I know some people still do it, but it's insane.
Somebody says, are the questions private? Yes, because names are associated with it, and we don't want you on a video saying, "Hey, I didn't pay taxes for 6 years."
Yeah, we don't want to be giving your personal information out.
Yeah. Plus, you should see the questions. Like, if I went through this right now, I would guesstimate we probably have 700 questions today. And just going through, I've managed to get through and scroll down, just pulling this thing. Yeah, it's like ridiculous. I would probably a few pages deep. So what we generally do is. You can either, I'll tell you where you can get your questions submitted and answered, but you can always go in and listen to these, by the way, at our podcast, the recordings of them after the fact. And it's never a bad thing to kind of go through and listen to the last couple. I didn't get the chance to sit there and give 2 cents on Michael and Jeff and Tony and Jeff. You guys did fantastic, though. But it's never a bad thing to go through and listen. Just in general, just even in the background. I like doing stuff like that. I'll play it in the car just for looking for ideas. I have so many podcasts that I sign up for, and I'm always just looking for nuggets. And it's pretty easy. When you hear something, it's like, So anyway, the Platinum folks, you have a Platinum portal. You can always go in and listen to the replays for all of them. The iTunes it's sitting on there and Google Play, easy peasy. And then you can always go to our social media, just aba.link, and then any of the major ones. If you have questions and we didn't get to your question today, I know you guys have a lot, you can email them on into Tax Tuesday to Anderson Advisors. We will more than likely download the questions to make sure that everybody got answered. I see there's lots of folks getting answers into these last couple pages of questions. And we have quite literally just hundreds of questions, but... I can see that. Oh, there we go. We could see a few. I see Patty active. Let's see how far back is Elliot. He's probably trying to answer books of questions. There we go. There's Tavia.
He likes some really long questions.
Yeah. So here's a good one. My self-directed IRA owns a rental condo. Can I get any depreciation benefits? It's really easy. No, because you have no basis in it because you took a deduction. Or if you didn't take a deduction and it's a Roth, it still doesn't have a... It doesn't have a basis for depreciation.
Right? Any rental income that you have is not going to be taxable to the IRA.
What if some of it was? What if you had, let's say that you're using debt. Would you be able to use the depreciation to offset the UBIT or unrelated debt finance income if it was an IRA?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either, but I was just wondering.
But you're right. If it's UBIT or UDIF, it makes a difference.
Somebody says, can I have an LLC in California and in Massachusetts? I live in California. Will California come after my Massachusetts LLC? It's not like they come after it. They just demand that you pay taxes on it. They want the $800 fee if they see it. Stacy, if it's just you and it's not on your tax return, in other words, it's not filing a partnership return or you're not getting a K-1, they never see it. But if you are getting a K-1, then California will probably start saying, hey, it wants the 568 form. Is it 568
or 568 for the LLCs.
Yeah, so they're going to, they just always bug.
Yeah, California's position is, if you're anywhere in the United States, you've probably seen a commercial about California, which means they have nexus to tax you for everything. And the courts have tried to correct that mentality, but
it's going to get a little wiggy here because they're trying to pass. I think they did pass the 10-year where they want to follow you around and tax you even after you move out of the state. Like there's no tax that California doesn't like. And they don't really seem to care about that constitution because they think that they did everybody a favor by allowing you to live there.
Yeah, it's a little bit crazy because we always knew that California was tenacious for saying that you were a resident if you ever lived there.
Mm-hmm. But now they want to say if you were ever a resident here, then any of the income that you may have earned while you were here, we want to make sure we tax it even after you move.
And there's a real concern that wealthy people or people with high incomes are going to move out of state.
I wouldn't.
Because I believe what they could earn from that tax is not near what they currently earn.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hear you. And it's frustrating, isn't it? For those of you guys, it's going to keep getting worse. You guys have a state, and I'm not going to say anything bad about California. It's just the state's going to need more money. They've done some weird things. They have an interesting view on your property and their property. Being that your property is their property. Let's see if I can go back and find something here. I'm going to go and where did I put all my slides? I'm going to go back and give you guys the link again to the tax toolbox. Shameless plugs, just because, so that you guys can see it. Just because this is the first time we've let anybody know that we have it. So we're going to keep plugging away. And see if there's as many people as we can, we're going to educate on tax and see if they can start keeping more money in their pocket and out of the, I'm not saying don't pay it to government. The best thing you could do is make more money with the money that you're keeping, because it actually benefits government to do that. The less they tax you in these types of circumstances, statistically speaking, they're better off in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that we're much better off doing our charitable activities personally than giving it to a government where the government's not very efficient. That's not a knock on government. That's just a knock on government. All right. Anyway, guys, no, I'm not saying that they're bad. It's just more expensive. So if you doubt me, go look at what SpaceX has done with NASA in the cost of launching a satellite and things. It's gone down significantly, considerably.
Mm-hmm.
So that we're able to do so much more. I think that's really cool. Somebody says, will TaxWise be updated going forward? I always update it. Like, I cannot remember a TaxWise where I didn't go through and add.
Yeah, it seems like everyone is a brand new.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of new tweaks just because there were so many law changes this year. So this is like, this reminds me of George Bush Jr., W.
Mm-hmm.
When he was passing all the legislation, this reminds me of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, which was so not that long ago, but still, where they're just turning things on its ear. We have a lot of provisions that are expiring. The CARES Act has a lot of provisions that expire at the end of the year. You have some that just expired. You have some that are just about to expire. Like, I believe that you have September, I want to say 27th or something like that, to get money out of your, maybe it's less than that, maybe it's 14th or 17th, to get the money out of your IRA or 401k, the early distribution. I'd have to look at that, but it's sometimes this month. So you have quite a bit. Somebody says the property owners pay an exit tax. Yeah, people are talking about California and the exit tax. I don't think it's passed yet, but AB5 was stupid.
No, the exit tax has not passed, and a part of that is a new tax bracket that would make their highest tax bracket 16.3%.
Yeah.
But I believe that's on income of over $30 million.
Yeah. This is gets a little nuts. Oh, is each module dated under the tax? Yes. Under the tax wise, yes. 401k loan deadline 9/22. Thank you, John. You get a star. And then you guys all seem really cool. I just would be glad that I'm back.
I know you missed us.
We're done in Puerto Rico. I was going to do them from Puerto Rico, but the connectivity is there. Like that, they got hit by a hurricane right when we went down there, and then they got hit right when we left. And I regret ever walking into that bar in New Orleans saying, "I'd like a Corona and two hurricanes." You asked for it. All right. So anyway, that's enough, guys. Have a good one. We will see you in 2 weeks. If you didn't get your question answered, we'll grab and we'll get to you. And if nothing else, by all means, here, I'll go back to the little slide. Oops, no, I can't go back to the slide. Tax Tuesday at AndersonAdvisors.com. Just email us and we'll make sure that we get your questions answered.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at AndersonAdvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.